It's October 3rd, 2016 in Dubai. So I think we just make this open. Why don't you guys all move a little closer? Everybody can be on the mat. You can be friendly. I think we just leave this open. Just whatever you want to talk about. Or if you're all shy, we can write things down.
Maybe you can start, then they will open up.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Why don't you get some papers, like little papers that people can have, and they can write down questions, because some people are very shy. Is that all right?
Why do you want
that? I can start the question.
Okay, but in the meantime, if people can write down, people don't carry paper anymore, so they can phones.
Can I start now?
Yes, please. Yeah.
It seemed that, you know, these children, when we bring up to Krishna, to the Krishna consciousness,
yes.
They like, most of them, they like Kirtan and they like Prasad. They would attend programs. But, you know, chanting, it becomes a challenge for most of the kids. You know?
Talking about chanting japa.
Japa, right, yes. So, you know, even when we tell them, they would be forcibly doing, not out of very much willingness. They would maybe doing one round, two round. Mm. So how to motivate our children to take up real serious chanting?
Well, I believe the problem with that is that we don't chant properly and we don't teach our children to chant properly. So chanting is not, maybe we can have a couple more. Chanting a japa I see is the only service. You don't have to put your name on it. You just write it down and give it to me. I don't know who asked the question. So for those of you who are shy. I think it's the only thing we do that doesn't have any kind of material sense gratification in it. You know, everything else, kirtan is nice music. So kirtan is nice music and dancing. Everybody likes music and dancing. And prasadam tastes very good. And I mean, everything else that we're doing involves some kind of material enjoyment, some kind of sense enjoyment. And japa doesn't. It just doesn't. Japa is really a form of meditation. And it really is to give you a kind of enjoyment that is separate from the senses and the mind. Mm-hmm. So japa done right should give you so much enjoyment that... Oh, thank you. Japa done right should give you so much enjoyment that you don't care about anything else. But I see that most of our devotees don't really know how to chant japa. And japa is for many, many people a ritual that they're doing because they're told to do it, and maybe occasionally they like it, but generally they don't. That's what I see for most of the adult devotees. So how are you going to get kids to do something like that? Now, I've seen some kids will start chanting because they think, well, if I chant 16 rounds, I'll become a pure devotee. And they chant 16 rounds for a few months or something, and they don't become a pure devotee, so they give up. So I would like to propose that we look at japa radically differently from the way that I see it's mostly taught and practiced, and go back to what did Srila Prabhupada instruct about how to chant japa, which is not usually taught to devotees for reasons that I don't understand. And look at how did Bhaktisiddhanta teach it? How did Bhakti Vinod? How did Jiva Goswami? What are their processes? And we should see that it is a kind of meditation. And that japa is not kirtan. Japa is smaranam. So I think that would solve the problem. The reason I think that would solve the problem is that meditation in general is becoming very popular in the world. I don't know how much in these Islamic countries, but in general in the world, it's being unfortunately owned, you could say, by the Buddhists. So most of the meditation that's being taught in the world today is being taught by people who have a relationship with Buddhism. And they're teaching it as a voidist practice. Or they're teaching it as a completely secular practice. However, it's becoming very, very popular. And meditation is becoming taught to children in schools now all over the world. And what I find fascinating about this is one devotee recently recommended to me that I read a couple books, very, very popular, best-selling books written by a top Buddhist about meditation. And what struck me was several things. The person was talking about coming to the mode of goodness. And was describing the effects of coming to the mode of goodness. And in reading it, I realized that I had achieved a lot of those effects through my own chanting. And it surprised me that a lot of those effects were mode of goodness effects and not transcendental effects. That was surprising to me, that I could separate and say, well, these are the effects of sattva-guna and these are the effects of bhakti. Because when you achieve bhakti, you achieve obviously some of the effects of sattva-guna. The other thing that interested me was that this person, who's one of the leading teachers of meditation in the world, was talking about that the results achieved through the meditation he was suggesting were not absolute. That they would be helpful, but they had their limitations. And I thought, oh, that's because he's only teaching you how to get to sattva-guna. He's not teaching you how to get to bhakti. But he was describing some pretty amazing things. I mean, he was describing being able to access huge amounts of peace and joy at a moment's notice, and being able to have the kind of equilibrium that Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita. A lot of his books sounded like I was just reading Bhagavad Gita verses. So I think if we were to teach our children and practice ourselves a kind of japa and gayatri meditations where we were feeling this incredible peace and incredible joy and incredible detachment, what to speak of love for Krishna, and if we were able to teach our children like that, we wouldn't have this sort of problem with the children or with the adult devotees, because what I see adult devotees struggle with over the long haul is japa. You know, if we're talking about 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, the people who continue to chant at least 16 rounds every single day for that many years is not everybody who takes their vows. I have no idea what the percentage is, but it certainly isn't everybody. And even those who do, they tend to. I see there's a tendency to get very lax, very sloppy, and so forth. So that would be my answer, my fast answer for that question, and I wouldn't say it's on my front burner, but it's not on my back burner, it's on my middle burner, is how to really teach japa as meditation.
Actually, sorry, what she is asking for the rigless. Rigless, what is the movement, parents are chanting and all. I want you to address the issue for the new people.
That is equally for the new people.
Suddenly, the
that is equally for the new people. Yeah. If you've just come to Krishna consciousness, all the more reason to start your japa off correctly.
Yeah. Children, I'm telling. Suddenly they cannot.
Children. Yeah. How are you going to do for the children if you can't do for yourself?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not chanting japa properly, and I'm going to get my children to chant japa, though that will not work.
So, Mataji, what I understand is that we should be very pure in chanting, in a meditative mood, so that seeing us, the children would be taking.
And you can instruct somebody. How are you? You've got to be able to instruct somebody. What does it mean to chant japa? What are they supposed to be doing exactly? Are they supposed to just be moving their fingers on some beads and saying some sound? So if that's your instruction to them, unless they're very unusual people, they're going to find that quite boring. There's no sense gratification in it at all. Kirtan, there's some sense gratification in it. Prasadam, there's some sense gratification. Japa, there isn't, that I have been able to find. So you need to know what japa is. That's my basic answer. You need to know what it is. I don't think it's a question of you have to be so pure. I don't think that's the question. Otherwise, you couldn't teach your children to chant japa. You're never going to think you're pure. That's not going to happen. the gopis in Goloka Vrindavan don't think they're pure. They think, you know, Lord Chaitanya doesn't think he's pure.
Purity, in meditative mode when we are chanting, I think.
You have to know what japa is.
Yeah.
You have to know what does it mean. And then you can do it yourself, and then you can teach others, and then if you teach others properly, then they will like it.
True.
But it definitely is a, Krishna says, of sacrifices I am chanting japa. So it definitely requires some mode of goodness to get into japa in the first place. Mm-hmm. Because it is a poison at the beginning, nectar at the end kind of behavior. It really requires some dedication up front. In the beginning. Now that's my very simple answer. Prabhupada's instructions about chanting japa, he would give different instructions to different people. But his instructions in his lectures and in his purports are quite clear. And what's happened is devotees have taken some instruction from some, you know, like one conversation with one person and made that higher than in Prabhupada's purports, in Prabhupada's lectures. And I see it's done a lot of damage to the devotees.
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
Actually, newcomers, they are interested to listen in Bhagavad Gita and everything, but they are not interested in japa. So how to convince them?
I'm going to give you exactly the same answer. Even Bhagavad Gita has some intellectual stimulation involved. Japa is you're finding a happiness that has nothing to do with the mind, the intelligence, and the senses. If you do it right. All these other there's nothing up front at all. With all these other things, there's an initial material happiness involved. Now, if you do them right, if you study Bhagavad Gita right, and you do kirtan right, you take prasadam right, it will also lead you to a happiness that's transcendental to the mind and the senses. But while you're getting there, you have some sensory and mental happiness also. Does that make sense to everybody? Do you all understand what I'm talking about? If you're studying Bhagavad Gita is very intellectually satisfying.
Yeah.
Okay? So even if you're not just getting spiritual happiness from Bhagavad Gita, you're also getting a material happiness from Bhagavad Gita because it's satisfying your intellect and your mind. And gradually, you get the spiritual happiness from it. So it's a kind of thing where, you know, I give this example a lot. Like if you have a cup, and your cup is full of some sort of just chemical juice, you know, the fake juice, and you take real juice and start pouring it into it, you always have a full cup. So with everything else we do, with deity worship, with reading the book, everything else we do in bhakti, in the beginning of doing it, there's some material pleasure involved in it, as well as the spiritual. And that material pleasure helps us to keep going in it until we've poured in enough real juice that that's the real happiness. And japa is not like that. There's simply no material pleasure in it at all that I can see. And I've been chanting at least 16 rounds or more every day for 43 years. So I don't see that there, unless you just really like sitting and doing nothing, I suppose, unless you find that materially happy. So it's a different kind of experience. And it's the only thing we do that I can put in that category. Even if you're, say, washing dirty pots in the kitchen, you still have some sense that I'm doing something that's meaningful and helpful. There's a lot of people in the world who volunteer their time washing dirty pots someplace. You know, even wealthy people will do that kind of thing as a charity. So there's, again, some material thing like that. In japa, I don't see that's there. So you have to have a very different kind of experience and a very different kind of motivation. And it's, what does it really mean? And why did Srila Prabhupada say the most important instruction of a spiritual master is to chant 16 rounds? Why is that the only thing that he had us vow to do at initiation? And the other things of initiation are don't-dos. But the only thing that Srila Prabhupada had us vow to do as a disciple was to chant japa. We did not take vows to have kirtan. We didn't. I mean, sometimes Prabhupada would say no meat, fish, or eggs means only eat prasadam. Sometimes he would say that. But most of us didn't take a vow even to offer our food. We didn't take a vow to do deity worship. We didn't take a vow to do book distribution or wash pots in the kitchen. We didn't take a vow to do any of those things. Mm-hmm. But we took a vow to chant japa. Why? What is happening there? What is it about? What are we really supposed to be doing? So, as I say, it's not exactly totally on my front burner. On my front burner today is figuring out how I'm going to fly from Delhi to Wellington. But as far as something that I'm giving quite a bit of attention to, and I'm hoping, by your blessings, that we can write something and distribute something that will really help people with this. I see it as one of the most major problems. Now, many other devotees have seen that this is a major problem, and therefore we have things like japa retreats. Mm-hmm. And there's been a number of books written on japa. Burjan Prabhu's written a bit. Burjan Prabhu, Satsubha Maharaj, Satchinanda Maharaj has written a number of books. Hmm? Yeah. Who else has written some books on japa? And there's some people who teach courses on it. So my suggestion...
Mahatma Prabhu also
teaches. So my suggestion would be that you avail yourself of these and that you learn yourself what is japa. What does it mean? Only and you yourself in your japa be experiencing a pleasure that is neither mental nor sensual. Once you have done that, and that should not take a long time. We're not talking about something that should take weeks or months, ideally. What to speak of years or decades. And we're not talking about something like that. We're talking about something. Look, if Buddhists can do impersonal meditation, okay, they're meditating on their breath. Seriously, they're meditating on their breath. And they're experiencing, from doing that, happiness in the mode of goodness, which is a very high quality of happiness. And they're experiencing that within a week. So why can't we do that meditating on Krishna? If we can't, then there's something wrong with what we're doing, and there's something quite radically wrong with what we're doing. So that would be my basic answer, is learn.
Can you share how do you experience?
What I would like to do, as I said, it's on my medium burner. I'm working on sharing something. I'm not ready to share it today. It's in process. It's something I'm researching and playing with. Using myself as a scientific laboratory. And I'm really trying to learn, you know, what is Srila Prabhupada saying, and what do our acharyas say, and what do they do, and what is... I mean, the kind of things that I can share with you that Prabhupada says that I have found personally very helpful. But again, I really want to have something that I can put together as a book and as a course. And in the meantime, my suggestion is you avail yourself of what already exists in that regard. Because it's quite excellent. I think that what's out there is very good. I would particularly recommend Satchinanda Maharaj. But some of you may not like his style. If you don't like his style, then go with someone whose style you like. Because it isn't a one way. That's for sure. That I can say for sure. It's personal, it's individual. The things that Prabhupada said that I found most helpful was a lecture in Geneva where Prabhupada said chanting Hare Krishna means that you imagine, he used the word imagine, he said you imagine that in your heart there's a diamond throne and you're sitting Krishna on it in your heart and you're receiving him and you're bathing him with Ganga and Jumuna water, you are dressing him and you're decorating him with ornaments. What basically Prabhupada is saying there is to do Manasa Archana.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. While you're chanting your japa. And Jamuna said that Srila Prabhupada personally gave her a lot of instructions in this regard, both in her deity worship and in her japa. So I found that extremely helpful. Now, if you don't have any experience with Archana at all, you may find that a little bit more difficult. Or if that's just, if Archana is just not your thing. Another instruction that I found extremely helpful was where Prabhupada said, when you're chanting Hare Krishna, you should feel the presence of Krishna. Now both of those are related, because the example that I'll give is that the deity is made out of material elements. The deity is made out of wood or stone or metal. Everybody knows that. It's not some kind of a secret. But we ask Krishna to enter into that form. So sounds we make are also material. And this is a whole discussion of this in the prayers of the personified Vedas. How can you approach the Lord with material sound in general? How can we talk about the Lord? How can we read the scriptures and so forth? And in fact, Bhaktivinoda and Bhaktisiddhanta and Srila Prabhupada quotes this at least once, I think only once, says that improper chanting is just material sound, it's just the alphabet. And in fact, we have a number of times where Srila Prabhupada will talk about don't hear kirtan from professional reciters. In other words, people who are chanting just as a business. That doesn't mean devotees can't get paid for anything. That would be a little silly. But people who are, it's just a business. Why? Because then he says that it has no effect. It has no effect. And in fact, we're told sometimes it can be polluting. So how is it? If it's the holy name, and the holy name is the holy name is the holy name, why can't we hear the holy name from, what's his name? Krishna Das. You know, why can't we hear the holy name from anybody? Why does it matter? I mean, you do have for very advanced devotees. I mean, Srivas Thakur was listening to Devananda Pandit recite Bhagavatam. And just hearing the verses, Srivas Thakur was in ecstasy, even though Devananda Pandit was not a Vaishnava. But the general principle is that we shouldn't hear the holy name from people who have no love. Why? So this means it's possible for us to chant like that also. Does this make sense to everybody? So what are we doing? When we're chanting, what we're really doing is we're asking the Lord to manifest in sound, just exactly like we ask the Lord to manifest in metal or wood. There really isn't any difference at all. We make the form of the Lord in metal, and then we say, please manifest in here. We make the form of the Lord in sound, Krishna. We make a form of sound, and we say, manifest in that sound. Well, if the Lord's there, what are you going to do with him? You know, some of us have a deity in our home, and the deity is something like, you know, artwork. You understand? The deity's there, but it's just some art decoration in our house. And we ignore him. Maybe sometimes we give him a little something to eat. Maybe. Because we don't want to get bad karma. So it's really about me. You know, I don't want to get a karmic reaction for my food, so I give it to Krishna first as a ritual. But really, if we have the deity in our home, then we should do something with him, correct? Yes? Generally, if you come to a meeting late, you come in quietly. So, just like you're having me as a guest in your home. So you don't have me as a guest in your home and then ignore me. That would be very odd. Isn't that correct? You invite somebody to come to your home and then you ignore them. So when you invite Krishna to come in the form of the deity, you do something with him. So when we invite Krishna to come in the form of sound, we do something with him. So I understand it like that. You invite Krishna in the form of sound, and then Krishna in the form of sound, he's there. And therefore you worship him. And at the very least, you feel his presence. You become aware that he's there. So you become aware that he's there, and then you worship him. Other things which Prabhupada says, which I personally have not found that helpful, but I know other people do, Prabhupada say, when you're chanting, can you remember, he said, can't you remember the form of the deity? So again, I have not particularly found that to be helpful. I have found it helpful to imagine worshiping the deity, but not just to picture the form. But Prabhupada will say that many, many times. He will say, you know, you look at the deity, then why can't you remember the deity while you were chanting? So if you just, you know, just meditate on the deity's feet and the deity's form while you are chanting, because you are again invoking a deity of sound. Another thing he'll say, which again, this I have not found particularly helpful, but I know of many people who do, and Prabhupada will say, when you're chanting, why can't you remember? He'll always put it like that, like, you should, or why can't you, or why is it difficult to remember Krishna's talks with Arjuna?
Can we remember the leelas of the Lord?
Yes, yes, yes. So again, for me, that was like, why would I remember Krishna talking to Arjuna when I chant Hare Krishna? But Prabhupada mentions that more than once. I mean, there are several times that Srila Prabhupada will say that. And then, whenever Prabhupada was asked, can we remember Krishna's leelas while chanting, he would always say yes. He'd said, it is required. Now, there are a couple times when Prabhupada would tell people not to do that artificially. And in one of those cases, the devotee who told me this story, how he asked Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said not to do it artificially. This is a devotee who has a perfect memory, like a photographic memory. And he has literally, literally memorized Srila Prabhupada's books, word for word.
My God.
Literally. So, you know, he'll start speaking and you're like, I know that purport. And he's saying it word for word. You know, he'll say, would you like to hear a story from Krishna book? And you say, sure. And he just starts telling you the story without the book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and if you've read Krishna book a lot, like I have, you're like, wait a minute. You're actually reading the book. So what he was doing was, while he was chanting japa, he was basically reading the books in his mind. Mm-hmm. While he was chanting, but Prabhupada did not like that. Prabhupada didn't like that. And I can see why. You know, I thought about this. I thought, that's very mechanical. But Prabhupada many times talked about it. He said, remembering Krishna's pastimes while chanting is required. And there's one very heavy lecture that Prabhupada gives. He said, if while you're chanting you're thinking of something material, he said, then it is all useless. Then he has a long pause, he said, or it will take a very long time. And then he says, why, when you're chanting, why can't you remember Krishna's talks with Arjuna? And then he says, why are you reading Krishna book? He said, if you cannot remember the stories from Krishna book while you are chanting, he said, then your chanting is inattentive. And he said, I forget the exact words, but like, then it's ineffective, you're defective, some defect, I forget exactly. And he said, when you're chanting, you should remember how Krishna is killing a demon and the cowherd boys are encouraging him with claps. But not mechanically. It should be very much like, you know, some of you I have met before. And when I see you, I remember, naturally, what we have done another time. Like when I came here, I said, oh, I remember your old apartment. It's a natural thing. So it shouldn't be just something mechanical. Okay, because if you're dealing with Krishna mechanically, he's not very happy like. But it should be something that happens very naturally. And if it's not happening naturally, then there's something wrong, Prabhupada said. There's some inattention, there's some defect. If you're reading Krishna book and while you're chanting, the pastimes don't come to your mind. So I found those two things especially to be particularly helpful for me. Doing mental worship of the Lord in the form of the name. And allowing Krishna's pastimes to manifest in the mind. What I find that people do is they just chant mechanically and they let their mind wander, which is, you're basically wasting your time. Almost 100%. You're like 99% wasting your time. And, you know, or they just try to hear the sound of the name. Now, Prabhupada gave that as a second. He said, if you can't feel the presence of Krishna and you can't remember Krishna's talks with Arjuna, then just hear the sound of the name. But that was always a second best. That was never the optimum. Prabhupada never gave that as a first. It was always a second. In every case. I mean, one devotee who said, Prabhupada, when we chant, what should we do with our mind? And Prabhupada said, just chant and hear. What is the question of mind? But that was one instruction to one person. And my understanding would be like, if I said to you, when I talk to you, what should I do with my mind? Mm-hmm. What kind of a strange question is that? It's a very strange question. So if someone asks you such a strange question, then you might say, just talk to me. What are you worrying about your mind? You understand? Now, if you just hear the sound of Krishna's name and you can have your mind completely in the sound of Krishna's name, what that will do is bring you to the mode of goodness. From which point you get a jumping off place to these other things. However, doing that is very, very difficult. It's an extremely, extremely difficult thing for most people to do. It's possible. It can be done. I know of many devotees who their job was started like that and then went to other places. Now, if you do it that way, then Krishna's form and qualities and pastimes should start coming into the mind. When that happens, the people who think, oh, I just have to hear the name, they take those and push them away out of their mind. At which point they're basically losing the whole point. So they're just meditating on the sound, and then these other things should come. When they come, allow them to come and absorb yourself in them. So whether you do that intentionally from the beginning, which I found much more effective and much easier, or whether you do them, or whether you allow them to come and immerse yourself in them once they come on their own. But so I see those two mistakes. People, they simply make a sound with their mouth and their mind goes all over the place. That's better than nothing, but not much. You know, or they're so attached that I just have to hear the name that as soon as hearing the name naturally goes into something else, they actually stop it. So those are the two big mistakes that you see that people make. In either case, it would be very hard to chant japa over any length of time. Now, if you chant japa nicely, all kinds of miracles happen in your life and you really experience Krishna consciousness. And anybody who's experiencing Krishna consciousness like that will not want to not chant japa. And you'll not have to convince them to chant japa. It will be very hard to convince them to not chant japa because they'll be getting something from that, which far surpasses any mental or intellectual or sensual activity.
When we are chanting japa, maybe some rounds, like 4 or 5 rounds or 6 rounds, we'll be in concentration, we'll be doing. Later on, the mood drags out, the mind's...
Well, that it takes practice. So it takes practice to be able to practice for any length of time. I mean, no matter what kind of meditation you're doing, whether we're doing, you know, Vraj Bhakti meditation, or whether you're doing Vaikuntha meditation, or whether you're doing Brahmajyoti meditation, or whether you're doing breath meditation, it takes some time to build up the ability to stay focused for long periods of time. So, but one should be gradually increasing that ability. Srila Prabhupada asked that we spend at least the time of 16 rounds working on it every day. I think it's something like any relationship we're having, it usually takes time to build and nourish that relationship. But you have, you know, some people will say, it takes me 3 rounds before I start focusing. And some people will say, you know, I can focus for 4 or 5 rounds and then I start spacing out. So different people have different experiences with it. I mean, I know one devotee who told me, said, that takes me 4 or 5 rounds before I'm really focusing. But I think that's the limit as to what I'm willing to share right now. And it's something that I want to put some effort and energy into. But there's a lot out there already that's quite good. I know Burjumper was such an endemar, such a endemar. They all have published books on Japa. And I think there's also some groups and classes on the internet that you can join. If anybody's written some questions up to pass, well, you want to just take a minute to do that? Why don't we just stop for a minute? And if you have some questions, you can write it on your piece of paper. Just before, so we just not, let's not talk for a minute. If everything can, if each of you, if you have a piece of paper, if you can write down whatever is, why don't you write down whatever is your real doubt in Krishna consciousness? Don't put your name on the paper. Something that you have that you really question, that you really have some doubt about, or something that you particularly are struggling with. I guess this person's writing about japa. When we start chanting, we start with Guru Pranam and Panchatattva, then start chanting by thinking manasa, by offering tulsi manjaris to Lord Krishna. Oh, that's very nice. When one round complete, our mind says to chant Panchatattva and go to second round. Here mind deviates. How to keep the same mood? You know, Srila Prabhupada didn't chant the Panchatattva mantra between each round, ever, like ever, and he never instructed us to do that, ever. Never, ever. He did say in a purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita that we should chant the Panchatattva mantra before the Hare Krishna mantra. I assume that means in kirtan. He never had us chant the Panchatattva mantra on beat. It sounds to me like whoever's doing this, just keep going. You know, if you're starting by offering tulsi manjaris to Krishna, then you can plan maybe in advance what are you going to offer for each round. That would be very nice. Like, I'm going to offer tulsi manjaris, I'm going to offer flowers. One of the most advanced devotees that I know in the Hare Krishna movement mentally offers flowers with her japa. And it's interesting because Jiva Goswami talks about meditating on the different realms, going from like the Purusha avatars to the Narayana to Dwarka to Vrindavan. And she was just doing that naturally.
So no need to chant between one round to another.
Oh, look, you can do whatever you want. You can chant the whole Srimad Bhagavatam between each round if you want to, but it's not it's not something that Prabhupada did, and it's not something that Prabhupada taught.
So we can directly chant also.
Definitely. Okay, that's a very long and complicated question. How to avoid negative thoughts and thinking? Well, in personality studies, some of us are more motivated by positive thoughts, and some of us are more motivated by negative thoughts. And it's just a particular way that we are as a person. You know, just like some people like strawberries and some people like mangoes better. You know, so first of all, we wouldn't want to have only positive thoughts. If you had only positive thoughts, you would do very risky and foolish things in life. Yeah? If you had only negative thoughts, you wouldn't get out of bed in the morning. And if you had only positive thoughts, you wouldn't be careful. You wouldn't put on a seatbelt. You know, everything's just great! And you wouldn't take care of anything. So we need both positive and negative thoughts. And some of us favor the positive and some of us favor the negative. And that's fine. The Shastra is full of both positive and negatives. The Shastra is full of how wonderful Krishna is and how terrible Maya is. And both are necessary. Now, if by negative thoughts you mean critical thoughts are mostly coming from envy. So our critical thoughts of others is usually a way to feel better about ourselves. It's generally we glorify ourselves by criticizing others. Sometimes people have critical thoughts about others because their main way of motivating themselves is to criticize themselves constantly. So we have people who are basically criticizing themselves all the time, and then they also criticize other people all the time. So that kind of extreme is not helpful. Just like if you were extremely only positive about everything, that wouldn't be very helpful. So I think that you need more of a balance. If that's what this person is asking, I would say you need more of a balance in your life. Go ahead and criticize yourself, but also praise yourself. Remember that we are a soul, we are a pure being, we are a part of God, and if we hate ourselves, we are hating a part of God. And that's not very favorable. Krishna doesn't want us to hate ourselves and just criticize ourselves constantly. If we're doing that, we really are hating and criticizing a part of Him. And that's not favorable for our relationship with Him. So you think of it that way. And Krishna loves us just like I think all of you or most of you are mothers, correct?
Yes.
How many of you are mothers? Everybody. Almost everybody. Almost. So, you know, with your children, you see your children's faults, but you still love them, yes? Yes? Or how many of you are married? How many of you have husbands? Not as many as have children. This is a very peculiar society. How many of you have a husband? You all have husbands, okay. I hope you didn't have children and not husbands.
We are from Indian culture.
Well, Indian culture is also going someplace.
We are not from new generation.
Okay. Indian culture is, anyway, it's not what it was.
Yes, ma'am.
Currently.
It's not what it was.
Yes.
So, also with your husband, I think more with children, but also to some extent with husband. You see the person's faults, but you still love them, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes? I hope.
Yes.
So do the same for yourself, you know. You can see your faults, but love yourself. You're part of Krishna. So that would be the main. Treat yourself like you are your child. Be kind to yourself. Okay, this is a nice one. I like to preach about Krishna, but I don't have that much knowledge what to do. Preach about what you know. And Krishna's really amazing. If you preach about what you know, he will give you more knowledge on the spot. He does it to me all the time. All the time. People ask me a question and I'll even say, I don't know. And then all of a sudden I know. And I'm thinking, how do I know? Happens to me all the time. Preach what you know. Be honest about what you don't know. And Krishna will give you more knowledge. He finds it quite fun. He really enjoys it. Really does. And you'll find it quite fun also. It becomes this really exciting game. Oh, how will Krishna tell me more now? he does. He really does. And of course, keep learning. We have the books. Yes, we have the books. Read them. One thing I've noticed here in the UAE is when I ask the audiences questions about the books, they don't generally know the answer. I can always tell in what communities people are studying Prabhupada's books and in what communities they are not. And I'd say in your communities, this is a problem. So, read Prabhupada's books. And if you don't have any time to read, then get the audio books. You are very fortunate that you understand English. I assume you all understand English, or you wouldn't be sitting here listening to me speak in English without translation. So, all of Srila Prabhupada's books are available as audiobooks, every single one of them in English. And, you know, you can listen to audiobooks while you clean your floor, while you do your ironing, while you wash the dishes, while you cook, while you take a shower. You know, and you can hear all, I mean, really all, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar Devotion, Nectar Instruction, all of Prabhupada's books. And I know devotees who have practically memorized Srila Prabhupada's books just by hearing them. So, study. I mean, come on. We all have time to listen while we're doing other things. We really do. That nobody can say, I don't have time while I'm cooking to hear something. That's just not true. Or in the car, whatever. I know one devotee who would listen to Chaitanya Charitamrita audiobooks in the car. And after a few years, he really knew the Chaitanya Charitamrita inside and out. If you don't have the audiobooks, you can. I'm only here one more day. I leave on Wednesday morning. But I can arrange. Did I give you before everything or no?
Which?
All the audiobooks.
No. I saw that.
So that's you can good. Just give a flash drive, yeah. And I'll give you everything. Mm-hmm. It has to be, I think, at least 16 gigs. Maybe 32. 32 would be safer. I think if it's 32. And I just give you everything. And then you can learn that way. Listen to Prabhupada's lectures again. You know English. Pity the people in Russia and, you know, in Slovakia, that they only have a few of Prabhupada's books translated and they cannot do this. They don't have audiobooks. So, preach what you know, Krishna will give you more.
And read in here. Sorry to disturb. I want to talk about one of the devotees. He's working as a courier boy. He's not that much well-read. But whatever he knows, whatever he listens from the visiting acharyas and all, he will share. He'll sit when one near Srinagar temple. he'll talk to people, he'll call and he'll explain. So in that way you develop the sadhachitta.
Exactly. Well, if he's a courier boy, he could be studying while he's being
now,
a courier boy.
Everything, no, what I'm telling is we need not to be well educated and do all eagerness to share.
Well, because this is not just intellectual, it's spiritual. It's spiritual. Krishna enlightens you. Okay, this is a nice one. When I'm making the boga, I think of the kids, whether they will eat this or not in the offering. Well, you have to. You have to. There's no point. There's no point in offering something to Krishna that you won't be able to distribute to anybody. There's no point in. You have to do that. That's part of your service. But you should also think about Krishna.
Yeah.
Don't only think about the kids. I'm sure Krishna will like to eat something that the kids like. So you can start with that. You can start with, you know, you're planning the meal. You can start and think, okay, well, what will my kids like? So this child really likes something with peas, so I'll put peas in. You know? And then, after you've planned it, then forget about it. You understand?
Okay.
So you have some time you're planning. You go in the kitchen and you're planning. Yes? At the starting, okay, I'm going to make this. This is what my kids like, this is what my husband's like. If you don't make something they'll eat, what is the point? Then you've decided what you're going to cook. Then stop. You don't have to think about it anymore. You understand? Because now you're finished. Now, think about Krishna. And even when you start thinking about the children, you can say, my dear Lord Krishna, I am cooking for you and I'm going to be distributing this prasadam to your devotees. Please, you know, connect that with Krishna also. I'm going to be distributing your prasadam to your devotees and I'd like to think about what they are likely to eat. Then you think about that, then stop. And then, okay, and what deities do you have in your house, or what pictures? Who are you offering to? Who are you offering to? Who are your deities or your pictures?
Let it go.
Oh, that's funny. And you can meditate on Krishna and how little Krishna, what he's going to do. So,
and nowadays kids like only the modern food like pizzas and stuff, no?
Well, my dear, so kids will like whatever they are brought up with.
True, so true.
They will like whatever they are brought up with. So if they only like the modern foods, that's because that's what you bring them up with. I mean, I'm traveling with my granddaughter. She only wants to eat the kind of food her parents make. Should I tell you a funny story? Should I tell you a funny story? This also relates to this one about husband and wife relationship. So I used to regularly make this preparation called strawberry shortcake. So it's kind of it's a soda bread, not very sweet at all, one layer, and then you take strawberries and you put sugar on them, or honey or maple syrup, and you kind of let it sit. You don't cook it. And the sugar dissolves the strawberries a little bit, and then you mash it, so it becomes like a syrupy thing. But it's got chunks of strawberries in it. Mm-hmm. But it's very liquidy. And you pour that over the soda bread. And you put another layer of the bread, and you pour the strawberries again, and then you put some whipped cream. So whenever I would make this, my husband would always say, you have to put whipped cream in the middle also. But he would never say, I like it that way. He would never say that. He would say, you must do it, that's the right way. And so for 10 years we would have arguments about this. This is so stupid, these things in household life, what we argue about, my God. So for 10 years we would have an argument. I'd say, no, it's supposed to be like this. He'd say, no, it's supposed to be like this. And after 10 years, he said to me, but my mother made it like that. And I went, why didn't you say that 10 years ago? Then I would have made it like that. But what was very interesting is that he, for 10 years, he would just say, this is the right way to do it.
Mother's.
He didn't say mother's way. This is the right way. So whatever we are brought up with, that is food.
Yeah.
You know? What we our mother and our aunties and what they cook, that is food, and other things are not food. I would find it helpful. I mean, I really find it helpful when cooking to listen to audiobooks, to listen to Prabhupada's lectures or other classes. I find it helpful to sing. And that way I really remember that I'm cooking for Krishna. I wasn't down here for her whole introduction of me. But I, you know, for 27 years I was teaching children, and 25 years that was in Gurukul, and well, 28 years if you want to count 1 year in a government school. And then 5 years I was teaching little children. So one of those years was ages 1 to 2, and the other 4 years was ages like 2 to 5. So we're teaching them, I can give you this also if you want, we have many English songs about Krishna's pastimes. And I used to like to sing them because English is my native language. So if I'm singing a song in Bengali or Hindi or Sanskrit, it's harder for me to get into the mood of what I'm singing. You understand?
Yeah.
Because it's really, I'm singing like blah, 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 but it sounds. And I have to be translating in my mind all the time. I really appreciated this one time at Bhakti Vinod's house in Swarup Ganj, where there were some Bengali ladies singing Bhakti Vinod songs. And I was, all of a sudden it hit me, for them, they're singing in their own language.
Yeah.
It's like my singing in English. So I like to sing in English. So I'd be saying, it is the evening, Krishna and Balaram along with the boys and calves are returning to Vrindavan playing their flutes. Now they're approaching Krishna and Balaram. All through the day they are in the forest. In their absence we think one moment to be like 12 years. I'm sitting there while I'm cooking. I'm thinking, you know, they're coming home and they have to be fed. You know, and if you're cooking for Gwanita, you can sing a song for Gwanita. How they're out on Sankirtan, and that's called Krishna consciousness. Think, I'm cooking for Krishna. Yes, of course, you have to plan your menus for your kids. Yeah, you have to. It would be ridiculous for you not to do that. That wouldn't be your service. Krishna wouldn't be pleased with that. Krishna, I'm giving you all this nice food. He said, will your husband eat it? No, he hates this. Well, what are you doing offering this to me? I mean, you're going to be happy. You know, I could just see your deity will start talking to you and say, wait a minute, this is your service, taking care of these other jivas, this husband and these children, that's your service. But you're not giving me anything they're going to eat. Well, I'm just doing it for you. What do you mean you're just doing it for me? But that's the service I gave you to do. I mean, just think, you know, if your deity's talking to you, he says, okay, I've given you a service. Here's this jiva who right now is pretending to be your husband. Another life, he was something else. You know, and here's these jivas pretending to be your children, and it's your service to pretend to be their wife and mother and take care of them. That's mm-hmm. your service. Mm-hmm. This one's from a Buddhist. Okay. Ideal duration of one round of chanting, I don't think there is. However, works for you. I personally find that I have much more focus when I chant fast and quietly. Other people have more focus when they chant slowly and loudly. We are individuals. I know one devotee who learned how to chant by chanting in sync with one of Prabhupada's recordings. It's a recording where Prabhupada chants 11-minute rounds. And how do I know they're 11-minute rounds? During sickness, we aren't able to follow the rules and regulations. Is it okay to do japa and puja less? Because one time when I was very, 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 very sick, I had several days where I could barely chant. I was chanting all day and only getting 3 rounds done because I had very high fever. I was going in and out of consciousness constantly, and I was dropping my beads all the time. So I was literally chanting all day and not getting properly any rounds done. And when I started to get a little bit better, I couldn't make any sound. I couldn't speak. So I would listen to Prabhupada's tape and I would chant along with that. And that's how I know they are 11-minute rounds. Okay. But this devotee said that that's how he learned to chant. And he perfectly followed Prabhupada's rhythm and music. And he said that he had such an amazing, amazing experience of chanting that way. And by the way, this person is one of the leading Catholic preachers in the world. He has hundreds of followers. They don't know that he's become a devotee secretly. He has hundreds of thousands of followers. And he said he's never done a spiritual practice that had that big of an effect. And I said to him, you don't need to chant that slowly. He said, but I really like to. He said, I don't want to change this. It's what's working for me. But I personally find if I chant slowly, my mind starts going all over the place. And if I chant quickly, then I really stay focused. It's up to you. You have, this is a personal relationship. Krishna is his name. You have a personal relationship with the holy name. Okay? Just make sure that you can, that you're hearing, that you're not going to shtik shtik shama shtik shtik shama. Okay, during sickness, it depends how sick you are. It depends what you're sick with, how long you're sick. Obviously, you do the best that you can. But make sure it's really the best that you can. And if you're a disciple and you've taken vows and you're not able to complete your chanting when you're sick, then finish and make that up when you're well. Gopi Purandana Prabhu, I remember he was so sick, he was in the hospital, almost died of asthma. Eventually, he did die of asthma. But I remember one time when we almost lost him, and he had, you know, tubes now in his throat, obviously he couldn't chant, and heavy medication where he was mostly unconscious. And when he got out of the hospital, he made up all those rounds, which really impressed me. I thought, wow. He made up all those rounds. So we should do that as far as possible. I mean, I've been so sick that it's like all day to chant 16 rounds. All day, and you know, vomiting, and sometimes I'll just say, "Look, Krishna, I have no idea if this is pleasing to you or not, but somehow or other, I've done this." Hopefully, I hope that none of you are like that much in your life. May your sickness be very brief and mild. But do remember that God is a person. But don't use sickness as an excuse to be lazy. Mm. You know, if you have time to sit around watching movies or something, but you're too sick to chant your rounds, I mean, hello. That's not good. But if you're really sick. Like Robin said, if you're too busy to chant your rounds, that means you're too busy to eat and sleep. So if you have time to eat and sleep, you have time to chant. So the same with sickness. You know, if you're well enough to function. But if you're really sick, you know, if you're actually really sick, just do whatever you can, and when you get better, make it up. I don't understand this. How to convince a person to chant on the beads, though they're convinced to chant? Beads is just an effective way of counting. Lord Chaitanya used to count on his fingers. Lord Chaitanya also would count on knotted cloth. So beads are not a requirement. Why is it mandatory to chant 16 rounds? What does the number 16 signify? When Prabhupada was asked that, he just said, because I told you so. He really did not answer that question. The only time I know when Prabhupada was asked that question, why specifically 16? He did not. He refused to answer it. He just said, because I told you so, and that's my order, and that's it. My own understanding is that there's value from Bhakti Vinod in Harinam Chintamani, there's value to fixing a time for meditation. People who don't meditate with mantras, like let's say, as I said, Buddhists who meditate on their breath, they usually take a time or a number of breaths. They'll say, you know, I'm going to meditate for 10 breaths, or I'm going to meditate for 10 minutes, and they'll try to increase it and increase it. You know, I think the Dalai Lama meditates 4 hours a day. So they have a certain set time as a discipline. Sadhana means it's a discipline, it's a practice. So we don't have a time for japa, we have a number of mantras that's our discipline. And I see that as making a commitment to Krishna. I remember there was one time when my husband said to me, the only time we see each other is at the morning program at the temple. You know, we don't really not spending any time together anymore. So we set an hour a day, I think it was 8:30 to 9:30 or 8 to 9 at night, that we would just spend with each other. My husband only ate once a day in the evening, so I would feed him his prasadam then, and we wouldn't do anything else. We wouldn't chant japa, we wouldn't do any other business. We just spend the time with each other, and it was very helpful. When I was growing up, my father used to spend about 2 hours with me every morning before he went to work and before I went to school. We had that set time to be together. So I see the idea of saying I'm going to chant a certain number of rounds is that I'm saying, Krishna, I'm going to spend this time with you every day. I'm making this commitment. And why specifically 16? I don't know of anything in the Shastra that would answer that question. And Prabhupada just simply said, because I told you to. So,
Mataji, in this regard, can I ask you a question? Like, the time, any time?
No. After. Okay. Why did Krishna create so many complications in understanding him? He didn't. Krishna didn't create any complications in understanding him. We've created all of them. It's exactly like if a drug addict says, why is it so hard to become sober? It's not. If you've never been a drug addict, being sober is very easy. It's not complicated at all. I never wake up in the morning and find it complicated to be sober. You understand? Once we become involved in illusion, we become complicated. We make our life. Why does Krishna allow that? Because otherwise he wouldn't be kind. If Krishna didn't allow us to become entangled in illusion, if he forced us, then it wouldn't mean anything. Our relationship with him is voluntary and loving. So he didn't make it complicated at all. Okay, I'll try to get to these as much as I can. It's a very long thing, how to make a better relationship between husband and wife and Krishna consciousness. So that could be a week seminar, at least. I did help to found the Grahastha Vision Team, and the members of the Grahastha Vision Team do travel to different countries to give seminars on the Grahastha Ashram. So I would suggest that if that's a need in this community, that you contact the Grahastha Vision Team and ask them to come and do some seminars. They're really quite good. I would suggest that you not listen to instructions on the Grahastha Ashram from people who've never been in it. Okay, so if there's some devotee who's never been married or who was only married for 6 months or something like that, and they give you instructions on the Grahastha Ashram, I suggest that you smile and ignore them. Very seriously. I'm really serious about this. The most basic things that I could say, these are not new things, they're not surprising things, is that all the problems in our relationships with anyone, but particularly our close relationships, are due to selfishness and me-centeredness. All of them, 100%. They're all due to what can this person do for me? Completely, that is the problem. You know, this person is not pleasing me, this person is not serving me, this person is not being for me what I expect. So the ways that one can get free of that is what I talked about in my Manushiksha seminars, where I talked about not wanting to be a good or a bad person, but wanting to be Krishna's person. How many of you attended at least one of my Manushiksha seminars? Not so many. The Manushiksha classes I've been giving all over the past... How many of you have gone to one? Just a few of you. So, to deal with your husband, not to please your husband. Stop trying to please your husband. And stop thinking that his business is to please you. He is not Krishna, and you are not Krishna. You cannot be Krishna for him, and he cannot be Krishna for you. A real Krishna conscious relationship means I'm trying to please Krishna. So deal with your husband nicely to make Krishna happy. Will your husband always be happy with you? No. Will you always be happy with him? No. That is impossible. It's impossible. If you're thinking, for me to have a good sense of self, for me to like myself, my husband always has to like me, you will be a very unhappy person because your husband will not always like you. I'm sorry, he won't. Sometimes he will, sometimes he won't. It's just what it is. It may be you, it may be him, it may be both of you. It may be something at work. It may be he has a stomachache. Who knows? Who cares? It doesn't matter. Don't make your sense of happiness dependent on what another human being thinks of you. And don't make your sense of self happy as dependent on how much you can please that person. Not on how much that person can please you and how much you can please them. That is doomed to failure. They will never please you 100% and you will never please them 100%. And what you do on Monday that will please your husband on Tuesday will not please him. It's just life. But you can please Krishna all the time. That is possible. And Krishna will be pleased with you very easily. It doesn't take a lot to please Krishna. You think, how can I deal with my husband so that Krishna will be happy? Now that's going to look very much like, how can I be a good wife? The question, how can I be a good wife? And the question, how can I deal with my husband so Krishna will smile? The answer will be almost identical. But the mood will be very different. Does that make sense to everybody? The mood will be very different. One mood is, I am a wife. The other mood is, I am a soul. And you know what? We're not wives. We're souls. We've been men in other lifetimes. We've been demigods, we've been anything. We are not a wife. That is a service we're doing. It's a service. The Krishna is saying, please act like a wife to this person. Okay. Why? To make him happy. Does that make sense to everybody? That is a little change that will change your life. Huge change in your life. And when you feel yourself getting frustrated and upset with your husband, that means you're not doing this. End of story. Whether he does it or not, that's up to him. But you can do that. And I always give the example that I can be talking to you, but I'm actually trying to impress you. We all have done this, right? We're dealing with one person, but really, what does this person think? We don't so much care about this person, we're caring about this person. Yes, we've all done this. Have Krishna be that person you're trying to impress. Remember that he's in the room. We can do this. Can we do it all the time immediately? No, but you can practice, and you'll get better and better and better and better and better at it. And when you mess up, be forgiving of yourself. Think of yourself like a child learning how to walk. So if today you can spend 2 seconds remembering, I'm really a soul and the person I'm trying to please is Krishna, that is a great victory. And if tomorrow it can be 3 seconds, and maybe you'll plateau at 3 seconds a day for a week, and gradually, it'll get to the point where the most of your time you're remembering, this is a service I'm doing to please Krishna. This is not my identity. I'm not a mother of these children. They're just a soul that happens to be in this relationship with me in this lifetime. But this is my service. And the person I need to please is Krishna. Will your children always be happy with you? Definitely not. Especially when they're little. A 2-year-old child is not going to be happy with you all the time. Good luck with that one. You know, it's not going to happen. And if any of you have grown-up children, you know, and your children are honest with you, they'll tell you, you know, I really didn't like this thing you did. It's life, you know. And I have among my children, you know, one of them will say, Mata, this way you raised us was perfect. And another one of my children will say, that thing was the most terrible. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. One of my children loved it, one of my children hated it. You know what to do. So that's just brief. Our problems come because we're thinking, this person is going to satisfy all of my needs and that's their job. Or I am supposed to satisfy all of their needs and that's my job. So either you're thinking, this is my Krishna who's going to satisfy all my needs. Or I am their Krishna, I am going to satisfy all their needs. And that is not possible. I cannot satisfy all of anybody's needs. I can't even satisfy all of my own needs. How am I going to satisfy all of your needs? And no other jiva can satisfy all of my needs. It is, that's not fair to ask somebody that. They can't do it. But they can be my service. My satisfaction should come from my relationship with Krishna, not from my husband, not from my kids, not from my parents. My satisfaction comes from Krishna, and then I am serving as a servant. What's the importance of spiritual education for children? Well, considering that I've dedicated most of my life to spiritual education for children, I must think it's pretty important. These days we see parents pushing children a lot with their academic education. Will this going to help the child? I think we can say that certain cultures tend to do this more than others. Yes? Yes?
Yes.
Yeah, just Asians in general. You know, I saw this with the Chinese family also. So, you know, I think we can see that if you really want a good laugh, go onto YouTube and do a search for Indian parents. Okay? It's on YouTube. It's about, I don't know, 4 to 6 minutes long. And you'll know it's the right one because it shows a husband and wife in their pajamas, in their bathrobe, in the kitchen. And the man has a beard. So if you see that one, it's the right one. And watch that. I actually had parents like that. Really, 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 actually, really, truly had parents of kids in our school like that. It's a comedy, but it's not a comedy. It's true. So my suggestion, go to YouTube, Indian parents. And it's a short comedy, and the man has a beard and he's wearing like a robe, and they're in the kitchen. Obviously, academic education is important. Of course, it's important. Prabhupada says Gurukul is to give specific training for a livelihood. So of course, it's important. I have a PhD. Obviously, I think academic education is important. Hello. But is that the only thing that's important? We're not just a mind. We have a body, we need physical education, we need, you know, we have talents, we need education in our talents. Not everybody is only a doctor or IT specialist, there's other occupations in the world, not only two. You know, your child may be musically inclined or whatever, so we need our talents to be developed, and we need our spiritual life to be developed, that's the most important thing, we're a soul. So some balance would be helpful. I think one problem is that in certain countries, there's just physically at this time in history, there's high competition for jobs, and you have, you know, a large number of people competing for a small number of places in universities and a small number of places in jobs, and so people have a lot of anxiety about schooling and a lot of anxiety about money, and I think that this is the problem. Whereas in cultures where we don't have that, we don't think like that. So I don't think it's just like part of the culture. I think it's a lot of it is the specific political and social conditions at the time. But in cultures where you don't worry so much. Like in America, you can go to college when you're 30 if you want to. Now, you don't have this pressure that you've got to get into university when you're 18. It's not like that. If you do something else and you want to go back later and start another career, and so it's, we have a little different view. But the spiritual, obviously, most important is spiritual. But that doesn't mean the others should be neglected. Balance. If we have special kids, how can we give the future to them without any guilty or insecurity in feeling? I don't have really much experience with special needs kids myself. So though I was a teacher, I dealt with a few special needs kids, but not extensively. So I've had a little bit of professional training and a little bit of experience, but I don't feel that I have enough training or experience to really speak on this subject. So my suggestion would be that if you have a special needs child, that you get some advice from people who are, just like I was saying, don't listen to advice on marriage from people who've never been married. You know, so I've taught how many special needs kids have. Maybe five. I taught about 5 special needs kids, and I've probably had a total of 30 hours of professional training. So I really don't feel like I'm qualified. I think it's something you should ask a professional about, without any guilty or insecurity. I'm not sure if this is our own guilt or guilt in them. It seems like in them. I don't see how a special needs child, why would they feel guilty? As far as insecurity, all of us have insecurity. You all have insecurity. With your life is insecure. You know, our lives, padam padam yadipadam, our lives are unsure, our lives are insecure. Mm-hmm. We never know from one minute to the next what will happen. Any of us could die in the next 5 minutes. I mean, seriously, we just don't know. We could go home and our house is burned down. I mean, you know, you just don't know. Life is full of insecurity. And all of us have some insecurity about our own talents and abilities, no matter how much training we have and how smart we are and what our grades are. We all have that. So just the fact that you have some disability, physical, mental, or both disability, doesn't mean that, you know, you have some greater insecurity than anybody else. It just means that you have some limitations. But frankly, all of us have limitations. And some of us have more limitations than others. I think that's just the way it is. And my own, just from a spiritual perspective, is to say that, you know, I'm not sure how much we're talking about a child, how much they're able to understand things. What specifically that the child's looking at, you know, that specific disability. But as far as possible, remember, everybody's got something that's not right. We all have some struggle, yes? Anybody have no struggle with anything? Mm-hmm. I haven't met such a person. So we all have something, you know, we have some physical illness we're struggling with, or we have some, you know, mental nature that drives us crazy, or we have some family situation that drives us crazy, or some financial situation. I mean, all of us have something. They were like, Krishna, can't you fix this thing? You know, so that's the way it is. And some of us are more advantaged than others in certain things. But the basic problem remains. The basic problem remains. I may have more athletic ability than you, but I may have less intellectual ability than you. So I would seem like that. And as far as guilt as a parent, I don't know. Do you ever not have that? Is that possible? Do you ever look at yourself and say, I'm a perfect parent? I don't care if your kids are all geniuses and Olympic athletes or whatever. You know, it just that's not real. It's just not real. We're not going to be perfect parents. We will make mistakes. We will sometimes make serious mistakes, frankly. I mean, I have some things I look back on, I can't believe I said that to my kid. So, I've been really meditating recently how much Krishna loves us and how Krishna loves us despite our faults, and that if we're genuinely sorry for our mistakes, that he forgives us and that we can go on. I don't believe it's possible to raise a child perfectly. I think that's not possible. Special needs, not special needs, whatever. It's not possible. It's probably a much greater challenge with kids who have special needs. I mean, it's probably a much, much greater challenge just to be patient, depending on what their needs are, but especially if it's a need that manifests in difficult behavior or difficult relationships. You know, or you've got to be taking care of that child for 12 years the way you thought you'd only be taking care of them for 6 weeks. So that it can require a lot of patience and a lot of humility and surrender on your part, and you may not be up to it 24/7. So you may need a break sometimes. If you're dealing with a really severe case, then probably you should have a break. Other people to help you sometimes, if at all possible. Okay, we have gone way over time. It's now 12 o'clock. That clock is 10 minutes fast. Does anyone have any really question before we end?
No, but I had a question relating to one of the questions.
Yes.
There, you know. This japa or the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is above the mode of goodness.
Indeed.
So why it is always suggested that we should be chanting early in the morning, because our mind isn't, or our mental setup is in the mode of goodness that time? Is it like that?
Well, Krishna tells Uddhava that until you fully realize the self, you should be situated as much as possible in the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness is a platform from which spiritual life is much easier. You can go immediately to bhakti from the mode of ignorance, like Magrari the hunter did, or like the prostitute who was tempting Haridas Thakur did. So that's possible, to go directly from the mode of ignorance to bhakti. But generally, bhakti is easier if our life is in the mode of goodness, which is why Prabhupada said, no illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling. Those are not spiritual things. Those are sattva-guna things. Or some of them are even just rajagun things. No meat eating, that's just a rajagun thing, that's not even a sattva-gun thing. Meat eating is in tamagun. So it's a lot easier for us to chant. Also, from a practical point of view, the later on it is in the day, the more you feel pressure to do the things you have to do during the day. You know, once it gets to be 6-7 o'clock in the morning, then all of a sudden you have to make lunch for your kids, and you've got to do this, and you've got to do that, and you've got to do this and that and the other thing. It's a lot harder to sit down and meditate. Of course you can. It's not that chanting Hare Krishna cannot be very effective at 9 o'clock at night, but it's more difficult. The modes pressure us. The mode of passion pressures us. Do things. Yes.
How to bring up kids, give us more.
I have a seminar on that, which I will. It's on ISKCON Desire Tree, and it's about the four keys to bringing up kids in Krishna consciousness. So I would refer you to that on the internet on ISKCON Desire Tree. Otherwise, it would take me an hour and a half to teach you that seminar right now. So instead, I will just refer you to that. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.